Daniel and everyone over at the Extreme Podcast, former WWE superstar Hornswoggle here. I wanted you guys to make sure to check out this brand new podcast. Wrestling, movies, video games, everything nerdy. Hope all goes well.
Hey guys, thank you for tuning into the Extreme Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel. And in this episode, I spoke with Christy from Soul Sister Paranormal. I really enjoyed speaking with her, and I hope you guys enjoy hearing what we talked about. I will be posting links to all their stuff below as well as on the Facebook page. So if you haven't already, be sure to go over there, give it a like, check it out. That is where I post news articles about wrestling, video games, movies, a little bit of everything, as well as that is where I post companion stuff. So if you're ever listening to an episode and you don't know what we're talking about, there's probably a post over there for that specific topic. Now, I'm raising money for PFLAG, so if you have a few extra dollars that you'd like to throw towards it, you can find the post for that on the Facebook page. It'll be running till the end of the month, or Pride Month. It's coinciding with my Pride episode, which will be releasing on June 27th. So I hope you guys are looking forward to that. Until next time, I'll see you guys on the flip side.
My name is Christy Sumner, and I'm the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal, which is an all-female investigation team that I started with my twin sister, our younger sister, and then two female family friends.
Gotcha. So what is the history behind Soul Sisters? I know you just mentioned who was a part of it. What made you guys decide to create a paranormal group?
Well, we've always had a fascination with the paranormal, and growing up, my sisters and I, you know, we'd watch the popular television shows at the time, such as Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures, and we always said to ourselves, you know, if we had the chance to go on a paranormal investigation, we would absolutely jump on that opportunity. And so we all come from a very researched-minded background, and so we would ask ourselves, you know, why didn't those investigators ask this question or use this technique or stay longer in this area? So in 2013, we were actually on a girls' trip to Moundsville, West Virginia, which is where the Moundsville State Penitentiary is located, which is one of the most haunted locations in the country. And we actually had a friend who sat on the board of the Moundsville State Penitentiary at the time. And he said, you know, while you're here, why don't you just take one of the nights and stay in the prison and see if you find anything, if you can make contact with our resident spirits. So we absolutely jumped on that opportunity. So we had a couple of voice recorders, we had a couple of digital cameras, and we just went in there really with the expectation of just having an interesting evening. But what we found, what we thought was so compelling, that when we left that experience, we decided we wanted to really delve into this further, into paranormal investigations further. So we decided to form Soul Sisters Paranormal. We came up with our team name, our logo, our theme music, and then we just really wanted to travel the country to historic and reportedly haunted locations to really tell the story of those locations and then see if we could find anything that was unexplainable.
You mentioned some of the tools that you use, the digital recorders, voice recorders. What are now that you've been doing this for a minute, like what are all the tools that you use, and like would you like to explain like what they do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that we always take with us is, as I mentioned before, those voice recorders, because we feel that the most compelling pieces of evidence that we can get are what we call disembodied voices. So those voices that we either hear or don't hear in the moment, but we cannot find an explanation for. So for example, as I mentioned before, we're an all-female team. So when we go into a location and we hear a man's voice or a child's voice, and we know that there's no man or child with us, you know, that's extremely compelling, and that's something that we can't explain. So when we capture something like that on our voice recorders, that is very hard for us to debunk. So our voice recorders, I mean, as soon as we go into an investigation, those suckers are recording, and they record for the duration of our investigation. We also have night vision video cameras that we set up in different locations around our investigation area. So, you know, if we're in a prison or in a reportedly haunted house, you know, we're setting up night vision video cameras because we want to have eyes and ears on every location that we can, even if we're not physically in that room or in that cell block at the moment. So then we also have, we all wear body cameras. So we all have a timestamp of where we're at during the night. And let's see, we also have handheld pieces of equipment that we take with us. And what these generally do is they take readings of the environment around us. So we have thermometers, electronic thermometers that we use. We have handheld devices that measure electricity or electromagnetic energy. And that's because when we go to these locations that don't have power or the power's been turned off, but yet we're getting spikes on these things that measure power, that's extremely compelling and something that we really can't explain. We have things that measure vibration, which is very interesting. So if you set them down in a room and kind of step away, if they start recording vibrations, that's something that's extremely interesting to us. We have video cameras that we all take with us as well. And then we're also very big on using what we call trigger items. And these are items that we take with us in an attempt to elicit a response from a particular spirit or entity. So for example, when we were in Fort Mifflin, which is a Revolutionary War fort in Philadelphia, there's a casemate, and that's a small subterranean casemate where they store munitions during the Revolutionary War, but it was also used as a solitary confinement cell. So when we went there, we asked ourselves, what would somebody in solitary confinement want, right? So water, food, we took some tobacco, and we left those in there as, again, a trigger to say, we're leaving these things for you. If you want to communicate with us because of it, you know, please do so. And when we do that, we capture some compelling, what we feel is compelling pieces of evidence. In that particular example, we actually had a male's voice telling us thank you, and we captured a shadow figure that we couldn't explain in the moment. And so those are things that we take with us. Again, those trigger items that we really take. And then after that, it's just really, again, those voice recorders and the video cameras that we really utilize.
Gotcha. So I've always like found paranormal stuff like an interesting, fascinating, whatever word you want to put on it. I also watched like Ghost Hunters and all those mm-hmm. shows. And I actually have a buddy that he's from Ohio where I'm at, but he is actually down in Florida now, and he does like his own like investigations things as well. So this question I had asked him, but I figured I would ask it to you too, because it would be interesting to get another opinion on it. So in your own words, how would you describe the word paranormal to someone?
You know, for us, generally speaking, the word paranormal for us are those things that are outside the realm of normal, that normal scientific principles can't explain them. So for example, you know, you've got the theory of gravity, right? So if I drop an apple, it's going to fall, and that's always going to happen. And that's normal. That's a normal science. But paranormal is something that is outside of that realm. So what we have, our known universe right now, cannot explain these things. So for example, again, as I mentioned before, when I my physical senses know that there's no man standing in the room that I'm standing in. But yet when I listen to my voice recorder, I'm capturing a male's voice in that same space that I'm in, but yet I know through my senses that there's nothing there, or no person there. That to me, again, is paranormal. I cannot explain that. There's no law that or theory that can fully explain to me why I'm capturing a male's voice when there's nothing physically there. So that to me is paranormal. It's something outside of the realm, essentially, of normal.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of how he explained it as well, which that's how what I think as well. But like, you know, somebody that the best term, I guess, like how I can go about it is somebody that might not believe or something. Mm-hmm. Always associates it with like a ghost or something, where in general it could be literally anything that you can't explain.
Correct. So. And that's why when you really delve into the paranormal community, there are different facets that it does encompass. You know, it encompasses things like cryptids, such as, you know, Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, because again, those are things that are outside the realm of normal that we can't explain. You know, it also encompasses UFOs or extraterrestrials, because again, those are things that we can't explain. Obviously what we delve in with Soul Sisters Paranormal are those things that we consider spirits or entities that attempt to communicate with us through some type of a mechanism, whether it be physically seeing it or hearing it, but not, you know, knowing that it's not there in the moment.
So I actually like I've binged a lot of your YouTube videos, and I like something that you guys do. You guys when you go to location, you kind of give a history of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that you always see, which I find, I like it personally. I wish more people would do that.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, thank you for watching them and thank you for noticing that. And that is something that when we decided to do this, we were very adamant that that was really how we wanted to approach our videos. Well, first of all, let me backtrack just a second. We never really considered doing paranormal videos. It was really something that I started to do when my family started asking, you know, what are these investigations like? What does it look like inside? What are you feeling? What are you sensing? And so because of that, we decided, okay, I'll put these videos together. I'll give a brief history because that's something that is extremely important. And it always has been in our upbringing. The recognition of history and knowing that it's important to know who we are. And so then it really started to gain some traction with some of these videos. And to your point, a lot of the people who watch them do appreciate the fact that we put in the history part of it. But it's something that, you know, we recognize that a lot of people who watch our videos might not have the opportunity to ever get to these locations. So we're fortunate enough that we can go and have a very tactile experience with that location, right? I get to put my hands on the walls of the St. Augustine Lighthouse or the Villisca Axe Murder House or, you know, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. But I know not everybody will have that opportunity. So if we can tell people, you know, what is the historical significance of this location and really walk them through that with us, that is the biggest portion of what we do. And that's what is so important outside of the paranormal. Now, if we can capture some compelling evidence while we're there and marry that to the historical narrative, that's absolutely what we want to do. And that's what we do. But even if we go to a location and we don't capture anything that we say is compelling or unexplainable, we're still going to put together the historical piece of that video and release that again, because for us, the history is what drives what we do.
Yeah. And biggest thing that I like about it too is, you know, you can go anywhere and do some kind of investigation. You know, you might catch something, you might not, but mm-hmm. that history behind it adds like another level to what could be going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you go to like Gettysburg, for example, and you catch something there, you know, we all know the history of Gettysburg. So like mm-hmm. there's a lot of murders, deaths, things that have happened there, which is why like it could be a trigger to what is going on in that area.
Correct. And you're absolutely right. And if we can put together, you know, some facts and figures and historical tidbits that might not be commonplace, again, that's really what we love to delve into. You know, for example, to your point, everybody knows the history of Gettysburg, but not everybody may know the history of Jenny Wade, you know, who's the only civilian killed at Gettysburg. So if we can bring that to the forefront and say, okay, yeah, we all recognize Gettysburg happened, but there are other people that it affected, right? The citizenry of Gettysburg was affected just as much as the people fighting. So again, if we can bring that to the forefront and give that historical perspective, that is exactly what we want to do and what we try to do with our videos.
Now, so something else I wanted to ask you, I know you guys don't necessarily like deal specifically with this area, mm-hmm. but for somebody that might be listening that doesn't know the difference, what would be the difference in your own words of like a demonic energy as opposed to like your favorite neighborhood ghost?
And that's a great question. You know, for us, and to your point, we really don't go in looking for anything that would be classified what we consider as demonic. You know, when we go and look for spirits and these entities in these locations, we're actually attempting to communicate with those beings that had a physical human experience, right? They lived, they were born, they lived, and they died. And we're trying to make contact with those entities. Now we have come across what we consider darker energies in that quest, but they're not demonic. What we feel that we're approaching, or we have felt, are those that had a darker history in their real life, right? So a murderist, a rapist, somebody in a prison who was in prison for life and happened to be, you know, killed in that prison. You know, if you're a bad person in life, you're probably going to be a bad person in death. So those are the darker spirits that we've encountered. Now, demonic, in me personally, I don't think a demon had a physical life. I don't think a demon was born into a human existence, lived, and died. For me personally, I think a demon is the is the evil in the good and the evil in the world, right? It's the antithesis to the good in the world, and it can be, you know, manifested by the evil that's inherent in the world, right? So it can be conjured by somebody with an ill intent. It can be, you know, summoned by somebody doing a seance and doesn't know what they're doing. So I believe that that is really a manifestation of the evil in the world, but it did not necessarily have a human existence. And so that's the best way in my mind that I can describe it. And so because of that, again, the demonic side is really something that we don't delve into. We don't go looking for it. We don't go summoning it. You know, we don't use Ouija boards or use seances or anything like that. Not that we believe that we could summon something, but because of the negative connotation behind that. And so that is really, in my words, what I, you know, the best way that I can describe what I feel is a demonic entity.
And I would definitely agree with that. Like, if you look at, like, for example, like Ed and Lorraine Warren, just to kind of like give another side too, is a, like, I personally believe like a spirit, like just a regular spirit, no matter if they're dark or, you know, like me, if I was to die or something, you know what I mean? Like they can't hurt you, like physically harm you. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a demonic energy could. And I also personally think, like, because people always are like, well, if you go looking for something or ghost hunting or something, you're going to bring something back. Mm. I don't believe that. I believe like the thing that would come back would be something that would be demonic, like an Annabelle or something like that.
And correct. And to your point, you're absolutely right. You know, when we go to these locations, and we've been to, you know, several dozen of the most reportedly haunted locations in the country, and we've never felt an attachment. We've never, quote unquote, brought anything back with us. And I really do think it, because we go in with the mindset of, one, respecting the location for its history, respecting the location for the spirits that it could potentially house. And then when we go into that location, we respect the entities for the person or the people that they were. So for example, and to sum that up, like when we go into a location, I'll say, you know, hello, my name is Christy. This is my sister, Jenny. We're attempting to communicate with you. Can you give us our name? Give us your name. We're not here to hurt you. We're not here to provoke you. If you want to speak with us or communicate with us, great. If you don't, that's great as well. We're just here to tell your story. And that's legitimately what we want to do, is tell the story of the location and any entity that wants to speak with us. And I think because we approach it in that very personal way, you know, I think the very essence of human existence is to be recognized, right? And I think that's the same thing with spirits. So we go in recognizing them and acknowledging them. And because of that, I think we've had a success rate with finding evidence that we can't explain. But it also serves to set boundaries, right? So we go in and we say, unless we give you permission, you can't touch us, you can't hurt us, you can't come home with us. And we are very staunch in those boundaries. And again, because of that, I think we've been fortunate enough to not bring anything home with us because we're not looking for it.
Yeah. And something you just said there, like you say, like, you can't come home with us, stuff like that. That's, they always say, if you welcome them to come in, that's when they're going to come in. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting that you said that, because that's one of the key things that I hear all the time, is like, you know, never welcome them in. Mm-hmm. So out of all the investigations that you've done so far, is there a favorite one that you have, and why is it your favorite?
Well, you know, that's always a difficult question for me to answer, because every place that we go to is so unique, both for its historical narrative, but also for its paranormal story and report. So, you know, it really is comparing apples to oranges. So like, for example, Brushy Mountain is much different than Villisca, but both of them were fascinating. But to really narrow it down, I'd say for the historical perspective, Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia is probably the most interesting to me, simply because, you know, this was a fort that was built by revolutionaries. There was just a small band of them that held off an entire British bombardment so George Washington could move his army out of the area. And for me, just going into that location for its history was just a phenomenal experience. So for that, I'd say Fort Mifflin, but we also captured some great paranormal stuff there as well. For the paranormal activity, I would say the old Gilchrist County Jail in Trenton, Florida. This is just a small county jail. It's about an hour's west of Gainesville, Florida. And it's, you know, it has four cells on the bottom level, four cells on the top level, and then a small jailer's house off to the side that's connected via a doorway. So very, very small footprint with regard to a prison. But that the first we've investigated there twice. And the first investigation, it was myself and Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations, and she and I had collaborated on this investigation. And we went in there, and every piece of equipment that we had that night was validating every other piece of equipment, which is really unheard of. So our K2 meters were going off. Our REM pods, which measure energy, they were alarming. We were seeing shadow figures walking across from cell to cell. We could see them cut off our laser grids. We were capturing voices. We heard voices in the moment. We were seeing things again that we couldn't explain. And so that night was just an amazing experience with regard to unexplainable evidence. So I'd say those two really stick out. The Ma Barker House in Central Florida, currently we've been the only team to investigate that location. And, you know, that was a location that was extremely interesting because it was the one location where we had complete control of the environment, right? So there's you to get out to it, it sits on about 40 acres. You've got to have a four-wheel drive vehicle to get back to it. It has no power. It has no water to it. It's just this house sitting on cinder blocks right now. But it was the 1935 shootout between Ma Barker and her son and members of the FBI, because the Barker Carpus gang was extremely prevalent. This happened in 1935. And we were fortunate enough to go in there and again, have complete control of the environment. And we were capturing things that were just so compelling and really germane to that shootout, that event that happened in 1935. So I would say that those three are the ones that I'm really proud of with regards to what we did there and the historical narrative that we were able to put together.
That sounds really, I actually don't know if I heard about that, the Barker thing?
The Ma Barker House?
Yeah, I don't know if I heard about that one.
Well, yeah, it's an extremely interesting story.
Is it on your YouTube?
It is. Or, yeah. Okay. It's actually one
I'll
of
have
our
to
most
go back. That must be one that I missed.
Yeah. It's actually one of our most viewed videos. The interesting thing about it was, we grew up hearing the stories about this house because my grandparents lived about 4 miles from it. So, you know, we'd go into town to get the mail and we'd have to pass by it. And my grandma would say, oh, there's where, you know, they killed Ma and Fred Barker. So we grew up hearing the stories of this house. And, in 2016, the owners actually sold it to Marion County, Florida, who moved it. So they put it on a barge and they floated it across Lake Weir and they put the house in an entirely different location. And so because of that, when I found that out, I approached Marion County and I said, will you allow us to investigate this? And they, you know, they were very gracious and allowed us to do that. So we had complete run of this house for days. And we actually investigated on the anniversary of the shootout that first night we investigated. And we, again, captured some very compelling evidence. Again, as I said before, this was the house was the site of the shootout that happened in 1935 between the FBI and Ma Barker and her son, Fred Barker. And it really led to the demise of the Barker Carpus gang, which was the most prolific gang during the Prohibition era. And, you know, when we went in there, we were capturing what we felt were chairs being pulled across the hardwood, desks being moved, doors being shut. We captured on a voice recorder what we feel are two very compelling EVPs. The first one said, Freddie. The second one said, yeah, Ma. And the first one said, get ready, which it was very compelling. So it was a great investigation for us. And one of those that it was very unique because it was in our backyard.
That's really the interesting thing is, like, since they moved it, I wonder if, like, the land that it was on has some kind of attachment still to it as well. That'd be interesting.
You know, it really would be. The new owners have not allowed anybody to go onto the land. But the interesting thing about the Barkers was they weren't from Florida, right? They were actually just renting this house. They rented it in November of 1934. The shootout happened in January of 1935. So they had no ties to the land. And they were extremely, because they were gangsters, they were extremely nomadic during their reign as the most, again, the most prolific gang in the Prohibition. Prohibition era. So they never had a home base. They always just used these hideouts. Right. And so when they moved the house, my theory was that the spirits were going to move with the house rather than stay with the land. And I think that we were able to prove that based on the investigation that we did, because again, we were capturing things that just are completely unexplainable to us. And we can validate that there was nobody in that house. We had cameras positioned outside of the house, so we knew that nobody approached it during the night. So again, it was one of those where we had complete control of the environment, but yet we were capturing men's voices inside. We were capturing doors slamming and footsteps. And it was really just an amazing investigation for us.
I guess kind of a follow-up question to that. So have you ever had anything happen in an investigation like that might have, like, I guess, blew your mind? You're like, how did that happen? Like, my buddy, he told me a story that he was investigating somewhere up here in Ohio. I don't remember exactly where it was. I just know it was Southern Ohio. Okay. And he was mowing the lawn for somebody, and a piano started playing.
Oh, wow.
So, anything like a story like that or something that you've had?
You know, when we go on these investigations, we do have things that happen to us in the moment. And one of the most fortunate ones actually happened at Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. So we've investigated this location twice, and this is a former maximum security prison. It's located in Petros, Tennessee, and it was opened in the late 1800s, and it was in operation until 2009. So it was really where the worst of the worst were housed. Again, it was maximum security. So a lot of people, most of the inmates that went in there knew that they were probably never going to come out, right? They had life sentences, just really bad people. So it is considered extremely haunted. So like I said, we've investigated there twice. And the second time we investigated was, again, with Miranda from Ghost Biker Explorations. So it was myself and my twin sister, Jenny, and our investigator, Kim. So three of us from Soul Sisters, and then Miranda and her camera guy, Josh, from Ghost Biker Explorations. So the five of us were the only people on the property that night. And we were in the gymnasium, and it was completely dark, right? So we're in the middle of the gymnasium, and we had set up a few things that had lights on them. So we had a glow in the dark balloon. We had that REM pod, which measures electromagnetic energy. And that REM pod has two little red indicator lights on it. So that was in the middle. And then we had some K2 meters, which have little light arrays on them. So very minimal lighting just in the middle of the gymnasium, right? So we're back about 15 feet. We're in a semicircle. And as we're asking questions, we're all watching these items in the middle of the room. And Miranda happens to be holding a camera called an SLS camera. And this is a camera that's been modified for ghost hunting. And it has an algorithm on it, and it's connected to an iPad. And the algorithm, what it's designed to do is, if you sweep this camera around a room and it perceives a human figure in the room, it will display that human figure as a stick figure on the screen. So even if there's nobody standing in front of you, if that camera perceives a human form, or essentially a spirit that has a human form in front of you, it will put that anomaly on the screen. So Miranda's holding this camera. Her camera guy, Josh, happens to be filming this SLS screen with his video camera. So you hear me say, did somebody just see the shadow figure that walked in front of the items? And because as I'm watching it, something from my right to left darts across. It's a shadow figure, and it cuts off my line of vision to everything in the middle of the room. So as I'm saying this, Miranda is capturing this anomaly on her screen, and Josh is filming it. And so she says, I see something on the screen. And so at that moment, Josh pans his camera up, and the shadow figure runs across again from the left to the right, and we all see it, and Josh captures it on film. And I mean, it's a split second, but you see it cut off the lights to the REM pod. And so for me, that was an amazing moment, because we've got everybody seeing it. We've captured it on the SLS, and Josh has captured it on his camera. And so we've got three things that are now validating that there's a shadow figure that we have no explanation for that's running across this room. And that to me is probably that sticks out to me as one of the most compelling pieces of evidence that we've captured, because it's on all of those things, and we all saw it in the moment.
And it's always, in my opinion, it's always better when somebody else sees it too, because then you can validate that you're not going crazy or something.
Exactly. And, you know, the timing was just right, just perfect, because, again, Joshua was filming that screen, so the SLS camera saw it. You know, another thing that also sticks out is we're investigating the Grand Old Lady Hotel in Balsam, North Carolina. And this hotel was built in 1905 as part of the railroad system. It's a three-story hotel. It has about 100 guest rooms in it, has a large ballroom, a large kitchen. And so, again, we just happened to be collaborating with Miranda Young on this one from Ghost Biker. So my sister Jenny, Miranda, and I were the only three people in this hotel for an entire weekend, right? We got it for the entire weekend all to ourselves. And so on Saturday night, because we were there from Friday through a Sunday. And so on Saturday night, we decided to sleep in there was a suite of rooms that was adjacent to one of the most haunted hallways in the building. And it's called Henry's Hall. And so the room, again, it's a suite. It has a little outer, so it has one doorway going into the room, but then there's a little outer room with a bed, and then you go through another doorway and there's another room with two queen beds. So Jenny and I were in the back room, Miranda was in the front room, but she was the closest to the door that is the only access into the entire room, right? So the door opens up into this hallway, and then so we had a night vision video camera on the outside of the door. And then we had a night vision video camera on the inside of the door. So you see Miranda sleeping, and what we have eyes and ears on both sides of this door. And so we all settle down for the night. We say our goodnights, and about 15 minutes later, a man outside the door says, "Please don't go." And we captured it. We captured it on our voice recorders. We all heard it. There's nothing there. There's nobody standing there, but yet you hear this voice. And so Miranda says, "Did y'all hear that?" And I said, "Yes." And she goes, "What did it sound like?" And I said, "There's a man outside our door." And she said, "Yeah, that's what I thought so too." And, you know, that was probably one of the best, what we call EVPs, that we've captured as well, just because, again, I can validate that there's nobody there. It's, you know, you see both sides of the door, but yet you hear this man's voice out of nowhere.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I would probably have the chills. And
it's one of those things where you just kind of you're just kind of laying there and you're like, did I really just hear that? Okay, well, all right, just don't, you know, just go about your business, let us get some sleep and we'll be fine.
So is there anywhere that, like, you haven't investigated that you would like to, that I don't, either it's in another country, or if it's here that it's just not accessible at the moment?
Yeah, there's a lot of places that we want to go to. I mean, even the small historical, you know, cemeteries to larger castles. Our bucket list is so lengthy right now. To really answer it, I'd say Leap Castle in Ireland, which is a location that I would love to get to. The Monte Cristo Plantation, which is in Australia. I've actually been there as a tourist, but not as a paranormal investigator. And it's an amazing house. So I'd love to get in there and investigate that. The Queen Mary in California, that's a ship that I would love to get on. So a lot of it really does come down to logistics for us, because this is not a job, our full-time jobs, right? We have full-time jobs, we have lives and families. So it really does come down to logistics with some of this. We're slowly ticking off a lot of the locations that we've always wanted to go to. And it's been a lot of fun, but we'll definitely get international at some point, and then get out to the West Coast as well.
So I mentioned this before we started recording, but you guys are working on a book, suppose, and you said it was in like folders at the moment. Is there a topic that this book's going to be about, or?
You know, the book is really going to be about our explorations with what we're doing, and it's going to allow us to delve in more of the historical aspects of these locations and really outline how we did our investigations and then what we found. I think we do a really good job of highlighting that in our videos, but we really wanted to keep our videos between 20 and 30 minutes. There's a couple that go a little bit longer, but, you know, 20 and 30 minutes is really where we wanted to keep those. And, you know, because of that, you've got to truncate a lot of things. And so to really go back and highlight the history and really kind of how we got started. And so it's really going to be a companion piece to our YouTube videos, but really give a more detailed experience into what we do and how we do it.
Cool. I can't wait to see it, because like I said, that's my favorite part, is just the history of it. So if I read more in depth of it, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to your point, you know, like I said before, the history part is really what drives us. You know, because of that, we've actually have a spinoff series called Landmark Legends and Lore. And this is really for people who like historical places and legends, but really don't want to spend the time watching our investigations or really care about the paranormal per se. So, you know, the last one that we put together was on haunting bridges. So we went around the country and looked for bridges that have an interesting legend or story behind them. And then we just put together that history and that story. We did one on haunting cemeteries. We've got one coming out in the next 2 weeks that I think is going to be a lot of fun. So that's really kind of a companion piece, again, to what we do. And it's more history driven. It kind of tells the story of those locations without all of the investigation portion of it.
I also saw that you had a merchandise store. What mm-hmm. are some of the things on that you sell?
Right now it's really just t-shirts, and hoodies and hats. And, that really funds what we do. Everything that we do is self-funded. So we don't have sponsors, you know, we don't have a TV deal or anything like that. We don't have producers or anything like that. It really is just a labor of love, and all of that is self-funded. So if we can make a little bit of spending money through the sale of our t-shirts, that's really what kind of helps with what we do. So right now it's really just t-shirts. I think we have some masks on there as well, hats and stuff like that, just general merchandise things.
So if somebody wanted to get in contact with you guys because they're having paranormal activity in their home or business, what is the best way for them to do that?
The best way is to go to www.soulsistersparanormal.com, and that really tells everything about us, all the locations that we've gone to, what's coming up next, where we're going to make appearances and such. And then there's also a contact us page. So you can go ahead and shoot us an email. You can contact us or message us on Facebook. We are very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal. You can also comment on YouTube under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
And do you have any plugs, things coming up that you would like to put out there into the world?
Next weekend, we will be at the Scream Fest in Athens, Tennessee. We're having a booth there. This was actually supposed to happen a couple months ago, but there was some really bad weather, so they postponed it. So this weekend, we'll be at Scream Fest. We'll be there all day. A lot of different vendors will be there. We'll have live music. So that'll be a lot of fun. We've got several investigations coming up. We'll actually be in Ohio in August. We're going to investigate at Pottstown Elementary School. We'll be there. And then Jenny and I, because we're twins, we're going to check out the Twinbergs Festival while we're there as well. Very excited about that. And then we'll be in Las Cruces, New Mexico in October, the first weekend in October. We will be attending the Paracon, the Las Cruces Paracon. We'll be speakers there, special guests as well. So just watch our website. We've got several things that are coming up. And every time we have a new event or something added to our schedule, we put it on the homepage of our website.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.